Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. We are starting our Pesach review for 2024, Tafshin Pei Dalet. Good to see everybody in person and on Zoom. And we're trying to get focused to get into Pesach mode. Pesach is exactly 13 days. It's going to start Monday night in 2 weeks' time. We just finished Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and so we are getting moving here. I am going to ask everybody to mute themselves. So please mute yourselves if you don't mind, and this way. But if you have particular questions, feel free to write them into the chat.
Okay, so I have to mute myself.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start with the following. Just a quick idea, something unique for this year in Pesach. This is a tough year to be celebrating Pesach because our minds are in other places. And let me just turn off the WhatsApp. Our minds are in different places. And, you know, to get into Pesach mode, it takes some time. But I do recommend, don't wait to the last minute. Start now. Get into it now. Get prepared now. Get into it. And when you start getting into it, it becomes enjoyable. When you wait to the last minute, the anxiety builds up and it becomes much, much harder. Okay, so better to get moving now. A quick drush, we know that, and I think very relevant for this year, and I will speak about this in a more extensive fashion for Shabbat HaGadol, but we know that Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatzah B'Mitzrayim, you have to see yourself as if you yourself left Mitzrayim. And the Abravanel, in his Haggadah Zevach Pesach, this is the first printed copy of the Haggadah, we're told about, he says as follows, he says that everyone needs to realize that if you live today, if you are a Jew living, and he's talking about the 15th century after he was sort of saved from Gerush Sfarad, the expulsion from Spain, which is a cataclysmic event in Jewish history. He says, if you're living today, it means you've experienced miracles and you have experienced salvation at the hands of Hashem. Even in a time of crisis, like the Crusades or the expulsion from Spain, it means that you've experienced salvation and Yeshua and Nisei Nisim. And the same thing is certainly true for us. So even though we are living in challenging times, there's still a lot to be thankful for and a lot that we've all experienced that is truly, truly miraculous. So we have to take that idea into Pesach this year. Now, let me just hear from you quickly, from participants either here in person or on Zoom. You could write in. Are there any particular topics that you want to make sure that we focus on tonight? Feel free to call out or to write in. Anybody, particular things that you asked about ovens, Felicia? Okay, yeah, David?
I want to know about air fryers. Can you kosher an air fryer?
Air fryers. Okay, I'll tell you the short answer. The short answer is no. You cannot kosher your air fryer for Pesach. You either have to get a new one or not use it for all 7 days. Okay, anyone else? Any other quick... Okay, if there's a specific things that you want to touch upon, please let me know. And we will...
Microwave, you can't kosher.
Okay, well, we'll get to microwaves. We'll talk about these things. Okay, let's start off right now, first of all, with Pesach cleaning. There's Pesach cleaning and there's spring cleaning, okay? Kashering cleaning for Pesach is not spring cleaning, okay? Spring cleaning, you go through your whole house, you find all the dust, everything, and it's extensive and it's comprehensive. That's not what cleaning for Pesach is. You have to be happy on Pesach. There's a mitzvah to be happy. Chayev adam liot sameach v'tov lev, according to the Shulchan Aruch. And that means that you don't have to go onto ladders and you don't need to find, you know, go to random places that there's no way that you brought chametz there and go and clean them. You do not need to do these things. You need to clean out the places where it's likely that you put chametz. Chametz in general, we treat very seriously. There are five prohibitions related to chametz in the Torah. Not to eat chametz, even in a mixture, not to derive any benefit from chametz, not to, you have to search out, not to own chametz, bal yireh bayim matzeh, which is a double prohibition, and tashbitu, you have to destroy the chametz in your home. And we treat chametz very seriously because we're so used to using it during the year. On Pesach, it's like, you have to like create a real wall of separation because it's not natural for us. It's not like chazer, it's like, oh, I can't go close to that. Whereas chametz, it's something we eat normally. But chametz does represent arrogance and boastfulness and the ego, the yetzer hara, the I am always right mentality, the paro mentality, that I could do no wrong. I'm always in the right. Okay, and having a bloated self-image of oneself, the heaviness, the kvedut of paro. Whereas matzah is modest, it's humble, it's flat. Okay, and matzah we know is lechem oni, it's the bread of affliction, but it's also the bread of geula. And when something is flat, when there's humility and modesty, so there's space to be filled up by Hashem's redemption. If you're just full of yourself, like bread, if you will, there's no space for Hashem in your life. So that's the little bit of a vort on matzah and chametz. Yes, David, is it really important? If it's important.
If you have a non-Jewish worker,
you put a
mitapelet.
Okay, what happens to mitapelet? We'll talk about it.
What does she do on Pesach?
Okay, we'll talk about mitapelet. Fine, good question. Okay, also see, when do you do bidikat chametz if you're leaving early?
I'm leaving on the 21st, the day before Pesach.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Okay. And do juices need kasher Pesach? Okay, we'll talk about that as well. Okay, so the what is the definition of chametz? Anything made from the five grains. Okay. Now chametz. Matzah is also has to be made from the five grains. So you can't have matzah made out of rice. Forget about whether it's kidneyot or not. Kidneyot's a whole other story, which we'll talk about. But you can have matzah out of potato flour. Matzah needs to be made out of five primary grains of dagan and chametz also. And this teaches us something very important, that the same qualities in life, same materials and ingredients can be used for something good, to make matzah or to make chametz. The only difference between them is a little bit of time. If you leave flour with water in the oven for 18 minutes, the truth is it's even shorter than that in a hot oven, it turns into chametz. It's just it's a split second, okay? That's the difference between these two things. Okay, how do we get rid of our chametz? We do three things to get rid of our chametz. Number one, what we do is we do bedikat chametz, okay? We check for chametz. Number two, we do bitul chametz, which is where we nullify chametz in our mind. There's a machloket between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim about this. Does it mean to nullify, to like treat it as if this is dust of the earth? Or is it that we renounce our ownership of the chametz? The third thing, and we do both of them, because if I nullify the chametz in my mind, well, I may still find a piece of chametz. Shema yimatzei gluzga yafa, the Gemara says, and I may start looking at it and eating it. And I'm like, wow, I want this. And I forgot that I actually nullified it in my mind. And bedikah is not enough either, because, you may find something. The bedikah may not be strong enough, so you also have to do bitul. The third thing we do is we also do mechirat chametz. We sell our chametz. Okay, now, let's talk very quickly about bedikat chametz and mechirat chametz. If you see the link that I sent already onto the Zoom, I sent in a link to frequently asked questions on searching and selling chametz. Now, this is on the website, the Shiftei. If you just search on Google, Shiftei Pesach, you'll find this online. Now, a few quick things about bedikat chametz. When do you do bedikat chametz?
The night before.
The night before Pesach. In this case, it's going to be Pesach starts on a Monday night. You're going to do bedikat chametz on Sunday night after Tidei Kochavim, when the stars come out, 20 minutes after sundown. One second. What locations do you need to check for chametz? So you need to check anywhere where there might be a kizayit size, an olive size worth of bread. Okay? That's where you need to check. Now, you can't eat anything even less than a kizayit. I can't eat a crumb of chametz on Pesach. Do I really need to go and search for that those crumbs on Pesach? The truth is, no, you don't. Okay, there is an opinion of the Chazon Ish that you even have to check in your, he used to check in his books. There are people who are machmir and check in all their svarim. They go through every page of their svarim. We generally don't, we're not machmir about this. It's where you might find the kezayit size of chametz. You find a kezayit size of chametz anywhere where you bring food in your house. Okay, and the Mishnah Berurah points out very importantly that for kids, if you live in a house with young kids, you need to check a lot more places. I know in my house, there's Cheerios everywhere. Okay, I'm not happy about it. I don't like there being Cheerios everywhere, and I try to clean it up when I can, but there are Cheerios everywhere. It's just the nature of the beast. Okay, what if you have someone come to your house, a maid or whatever it is, and she cleans your, or he cleans your whole house 3 days before Pesach? Do you still need to search those places out? The answer is yes. You should still search, do a cursory check the night of the 14th in those places. Now, if you're going away for all of Pesach, do you still need to clean? In theory, no, because you're selling your chametz. You're selling the whole house. Okay. Well, we'll talk about you really in Israel. We rent out our whole house. You're not allowed to sell land to non-Jews in Israel. That's or at least to idolaters, but minimally. So we rent out our homes. But many poskim say you should still perform the mitzvah of bitikat chametz. So what do? You should sell or rent out your whole house, except for one room. And then you do betikat chametz in that one room. That's what you should do if you were going away for Pesach. Is anyone here going away for Pesach? Raise your hand. Yeah, if you're going away for Pesach, that's what you should do. Okay, you should rent your whole house out, but then leave one room where you're going to do betikat chametz.
Can you take all your non-Pesach stuff and put it into one room?
Yes.
And lock it up with a key.
Yes, and that's the place
that's your Pesach.
That's the stuff you're selling. Non-Pesach stuff. Now, let's say you're traveling. If anyone, no one here is traveling 30 days before Pesach, because you already would have, not 30 days before Pesach, we're already within. Now, if one is traveling, if you're traveling within 30 days of Pesach, meaning now, or you travel 3 days or 4 days or a week before Pesach, you do betikat chametz the night before you leave without a bracha. Okay? The only time you do betikat chametz with a bracha is the night of the 14th or the day of the 14th if you didn't do it for some reason on the night of the 14th. Can you use a flashlight to search for chametz? The truth is you have to use Or Haner. You have to use a candle. Rav Avadia Paskins, you could also use a candle, a flashlight, because it sometimes works better. I recommend, start with a candle, especially with young kids, it's dangerous, then move on to a flashlight or a phone light, whatever it is.
Can I do my betikat chametz?
Dave, hold the question till the end. Does one need to hide pieces of bread before betikat chametz? So this is an idea quoted in the Ramah, in Siman Taf Lamed Bet, where he quotes this minhag, and it's based on the Arizal, that you should specifically scatter 10 pieces of bread. And the goal is to make sure what happens if you make the brachan searching for chametz. You don't find any chametz. What are you supposed to do? Someone cleaned your house beforehand. So you, okay, so this way you're not going to have a bracha levatala. What if you go to a hotel room? Let's say you check, you do betikat chametz in your house on Sunday night, and you get to your hotel on the Kinneret on Monday morning, okay? Do you need to check in the hotel room? You have to actually do a bedika without a bracha. Even if you check into a hotel in the middle of Pesach, you should do a bedika without a bracha. Okay? What about getting rid of chametz in the garbage can? So there's a debate whether, if the garbage can your domain or is it public domain? It's an interesting question, right? So if you put the garbage down the street, in one of those big canisters. I know in the Gush, for example, they have these big canisters. You throw it in there. That's public domain. It's not yours anymore. But if it's still in your green garbage can on your property, it's still yours. So some say this is problematic, and you're throwing out all your garbage on the morning of before Pesach starts. Okay, so you want to make sure it's not edible. Some say you should pour on some chomer pagum, pour some bleach on or something that would make it totally inedible, and then it's not an issue. With regards to the sale of chametz, we'll be selling chametz here. I'll send that information very soon. You're not supposed to, you just sell the chametz, but not the utensils. If you sell the utensils, then they're in the hands of non-Jews. And then you need to tovel all your dishes again. So we don't want to have to do that, so we just sell the, then the contract in Ra'anana is just to sell the chametz, not the utensils itself. Again, we don't actually sell our home, we rent it out, because it is a prohibition of Asura Te'lem Chanaya. You're not allowed to sell your home here in Eretz Yisrael. Can one sell all types of chametz? Can you leave a loaf of bread in the fridge? Can you leave whiskey in your home? So there are two different opinions in this regard. Some are stringent not to sell any chametz gamur. Chametz gamur is bread, is pasta. Whiskey is chametz gamur. It's like total, full-on chametz. Some people don't sell it. They get rid of the stuff. My Rav, he said, he wants to, he would like give all his whiskey away before Pesach. He says, I can get rid of it. Not a big deal. I don't need. What do I? I'll buy a few bottles after
this
Pesach.
This year, of course, you'll Pesach whiskey this year.
Okay, so it's not whiskey then. Okay, so it's something else. It's not whiskey. Maybe it's arak. Maybe it's cognac. But it's not whiskey. And Rav Soloveitchik was machmer not to sell chametz gamur. But others say that you could keep chametz. That would, otherwise it would entail a significant loss. You can keep that stuff. In which case, people keep their whiskey cabinet, essentially. They sell it, but they have it still in their home. They don't own it during the time, but you sort of sell it. And this is defined on a personal basis. You got one bottle of whiskey, a red bottle of Johnny, sell it. Get rid of it. Yeah, just give it up. Okay, big deal. You have 50 bottles of whiskey. It's a, slightly different story. But we should talk in another perspective if you have 50 bottles of whiskey in your home. But fine. That's another issue. But besed there. And what if you're traveling overseas? If anyone is traveling overseas and you're going to the east or to the west, so when are you selling your chametz? Right? Because if you go east, you're starting Pesach earlier. If you go west, you're starting Pesach later. Okay, so Rav Moshe Feinstein paskens that you should sell your chametz in the place where you start Pesach first. If you're going to China, okay, you got to sell your Pesach, your chametz, the time that you start before you start Pesach in China. Okay, and if you're going west to New York, so fine, you could sell it in Eretz Yisrael, not a problem, because that will start earlier here than in let's say America, whatever.
Can I do okay. Public chametz at 5 o'clock in the afternoon before I leave?
No, do it the night before. Do it the night before.
You mean the Monday night?
When are you
Saturday
leaving?
Night, I'm leaving Monday afternoon. Night, the 21st.
Okay, so then do it Saturday night because that's the last night before you go. Okay. That's with regards to, does anyone have any questions with regards to selling chametz? Or any questions about searching for chametz? Or bitul chametz? Any questions? Yafeh. Let's go on to the next topic. Chametz products. Okay. There's a general principle that anything in your home that has chametz in it, that a dog would not eat, okay? Chametz shenifsal me'achilat kelev, you don't need to worry about that type of chametz. Okay, you have denatured alcohol products in your house. No, dogs will not eat that stuff. It's poison. Okay, you don't need to worry about this stuff. So let's go through a few different things. So again, anything your dog wouldn't eat, you can keep in your house and own it and not a problem. Don't eat it because it's probably unhealthy or dangerous, but you don't need to sell that stuff. Okay, so let's talk about dog food. That means that with dog food, you need to get kasher lePesach dog food, okay? Because dog does eat dog food, so you have to go to the store and get kasher lePesach dog food, okay? It's really important that you do that. Okay, what about medicines on Pesach? So let me give you the rundown on medicines. Medicines, usually we don't like chew on medicines. Usually swallow medicines, okay? That's generally how we intake them. Either you swallow it or you whatever it is. So if you're on a medicine, okay, that you swallow, so it's not eating. You're not eating. Now there is an opinion of the Rush who says that if you swallow something, you make it into a food because that's the way that you take that thing, and that's called achshavei. No, then it turns it into a food, and that's a problem according to the Rush. But we generally don't pasken this way. We don't assume that achshavei is a problem. In which case. We don't assume that medic swallowing pills is not a normal way to eat. That's not considered eating, and therefore there's no issue of swallowing medication.
Injection?
Because you're taking no injections. Certainly no problem. Certainly no problem. No problem. Certainly no problem. Certainly no problem. Now the one area of concern is if something has a taste to it. Sometimes you have medications that are sweet, that have sugar in them or other things, so that especially for kids, so that you will take them. Sometimes you have sugar coated Tylenol or Acamol, whatever it is. Okay, so anything that's that is no taste to it, or tastes very bitter, there are no issues whatsoever with taking those things, okay? That's number one. Number two, if you have any life-threatening medication, don't even ask questions, just continue taking it. Don't try to find this, and doctor, I need, no. You have a blood, if serious heart, it's not even a question. You take your medication, you take it just like you take it during the year. There are no discussions, you take it. It's not an issue at all. David, everything, take it.
No,
you take
I'm
your medication.
There's a hotline and all the coupons
okay.
That they found through and they asked, Rabbi, can I take this? Can I take
okay.
that?
Okay, so the hotlines, there are hotlines. And from what I understand, the OU stopped doing this. There are hotlines for things. Listen, some people are very machmir about this. Again, if you're in swallowing a pill or any medication, which is most medications, especially serious ones, you don't need a hechsher for Pesach at all. Nikuda, you don't need it. And certainly if it's life-threatening or it's something that's very significant for you. The one concern is around medications that you would taste. Okay? If you could find a replacement for that type of medication, so find a replacement for that medication. Okay? Or what you could do is you could check on some of the lists. Kosharot is a website that has the lists. You could check with each of the kupot, and they will tell you whether your particular medication is even an issue, whether the ones that have taste are a problem on Pesach. They'll give you the list, and you could check those things. Okay? Also, vitamins and supplements. Rav Schechter Paskins, who doesn't think that this is an issue at all. They're just like medicine, and again, they're inedible. They're achshavei does not apply to these things either. If you can get kasher lePesach stuff, especially vitamins that you're like chewing, so fine. So then you'd have to make sure it's kasher lePesach. Those gummies that are like candy, they just happen to have some vitamin C in there. You have to make sure those are kasher kasher lePesach. Okay. Any other questions about medicine for Pesach? Yafeh. Okay. Next, soaps and cosmetics. So soaps and cosmetics sometimes have chametz in them. okay? Especially things like denatured, you know, there's alcohol in some products. And there are some people who are machmir about denatured alcohol. Rav Eider, Rav Shimon Eider is machmir about this. So he's concerned about things that are found in, you know, deodorant and aftershaves and all these things. Rav Avadia says we don't need to be concerned about denatured alcohol at all. It's not kasher the achilat kelev, meaning an animal and dog would not eat this stuff. And in general, we are not machmir about these things. Okay, so creams, perfumes, anything that contains alcohol, it's not a problem. No one eats this stuff. Soaps and shampoos. Again, some people are stringent. You do not have to be stringent. None of this stuff. Detergent, shoe polish. I don't know anyone who eats this stuff. Dishwashing detergent, you do not require certification. You don't need any certification in this area at all.
Do we need a special toothpaste?
We'll get to toothpaste in a second. Okay. Now, milk. Let's talk about milk products on Pesach. The concern with milk, okay, is that, I mean, milk doesn't generally have chametz in it, but there's a concern that, let's say I go to the store and I buy a carton of milk. Now, that carton of milk, maybe it was milked yesterday, it's the middle of Pesach, and maybe the animals ate chametz, and then what's causing the milk to come into existence is chametz, and I'm getting benefit from that, which might be a problem. Okay? Many say that this is not a problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Eliezer Malamed say this is not a problem in any case. But some are machmir because, well, you're supporting people who are, you know, could be Jews, or you're supporting farmers who are making use of chametz on Pesach. You don't want to be misayeya. You don't want to help someone who's violating the Torah. But the truth is, you don't really need to be concerned. Most of the dairy products that we eat in this country come from a company called Tnuva. And Rav Weitman, who's the Rav Mashkiach of Tnuva, he writes about that in all of their dairy farms, they make sure, you want some cola? Okay, they make sure that, so you can buy, now, some are, because some people are stringent about this, sometimes you'll see labels that, which will say, you know, that it's from Erev, Kasher LePesach, Erev Pesach. Or Ayin Pei. Ayin Pei tells you Erev Pesach means that it was milked before Pesach. But you can buy milk that was milked on Pesach itself. Not an issue at all. However, when it comes to eggs, that's more problematic. Because when it comes to chickens and eggs, there's no supervision about whether the chickens are eating chametz or not. So it is important to buy your eggs before Pesach. Okay, and it will say kasher erev Pesach. So you have to want to look for eggs that are kasher erev Pesach. Okay, so Jake, that was your question. So eggs, you should purchase your eggs before Pesach. I will just tell you, when we go away for Pesach, my whole family, I'm not going this year, but my family is going. Usually they go to Virginia Beach and it's like 25, 30 people in the house. And we happen to eat a lot of eggs in my family. Every morning, everyone has eggs for breakfast. Okay, so literally, you know, we'll go through like 36 eggs in a morning. Okay, sometimes even more. So you go to the store and you buy like 8 cartons of 48 eggs. And they're like looking at you at Walmart like, what is wrong with you people? You know, but everyone's having omelets, and everyone's, you know what we eat in Pesach. Like, what are you gonna eat? You have eggs, so it's just, yeah.
Can I just ask about the milk?
Yeah.
The cream cheese and that all has to have, if it's smooth cream cheese, it must have.
Again, yeah, it has to have kasher lePesach. But all that stuff was made before Pesach usually, and you know, it's not an issue. Again, it's not an issue. Milk is not a problem. It's eggs. We said you need to make sure that the eggs that you're buying, that it says that they were ready produced.
Or just regular meal. Like
No. Milk and milk products. You could buy them that the ones are on Pesach, made on Pesach. But milk products are made way beforehand, right? If you buy cream cheese, it was produced a month before, right? It's not the
so
day
what
before.
You can only eat it Erev Pesach.
No, again, you don't need to worry about that. You don't need to worry about it Erev Pesach. As long as it says Kasher LePesach on milk products, you're fine. It's not an issue. Okay, we'll talk about kidney in a little bit. Now, what about toothpaste, lipstick, and mouthwash? Okay, so Rav Soloveitchik had the opinion that toothpaste is not edible. People don't eat toothpaste. My children sometimes do eat toothpaste, but otherwise most people don't. And okay, but Rav Moshe Feinstein says you should ideally have Kasher LePesach toothpaste. So machloket here about this, but I would recommend you get a new toothbrush for Pesach. and you get kasher l'Pesach toothpaste. If you don't, it's still fine, but you should try to get kasher l'Pesach toothpaste. You can get it in the stores. Not an issue. Exactly. It's very easy to get. Okay, and while we're talking about this, you should know that some people are also machmir. To be stringent, to have liquid toothpaste dafka on Shabbat. That is something that we should try to be careful for, if you can, because there are some issues of having solid toothpaste on Shabbat. But beseder, tov. Okay, matzah ashira, another product.
What about mouthwash?
I mean, it has alcohol in it. People usually don't eat it, so it's probably fine. But if you could find kosher Pesach mouthwash, that's more ideal. Yeah. Okay, another product, matzah ashira. Matzah ashira is enriched matzah. Let's talk about matzah in general. Matzah shmura means matzah that was guarded. There are different levels of guarding the matzah. What are you guarding it from? That it doesn't come into contact with water. Some matzah is guarded from the time that it's cut, that it's reaped in the field. Other matzah, they're just guarded from the time that they're ground. And some are, you know, just guarded from the time that they're, you know, you got to get them in the shuk. Okay, you literally buy it in the shuk. Okay, matzah shmura today means that it's guarded from the time that ktsira, mishat ktsira. This is the reason why when you go to the store and you're buying matzah, you're like, oh my God, I've never bought such an inexpensive cracker in my life. Okay, and you're going to see matzah boxes for 80 shekel, 60 shekel. I'm not even talking about the shmur, handmade matzah. I'm not talking about handmade matzah right now. Handmade matzah is a whole other story. I'm talking about the machine-made matzah. Okay, and then you'll always find on the shelf matzah for 20, like a box of matzah for 20 shekel. Because that's not matzah shmura, or at least not matzah shmura according to the more stringent interpretations. That's how it explains the difference in the price. It's kasher l'Pesach. And on the other 6 days of Pesach, after the night of Pesach, okay, you can eat it. Some people are machmir, they say, okay, I only want to have matzah shmura. But it just explains the difference in the price.
So what's now, the difference? What's the real difference?
Again, how long it's guarded for.
How long it's
guarded for. Okay? But none of it's chametz. You don't need to worry. None of it is chametz. And if you feel that you feel stretched, like, oh my God, this is so expensive, I can't afford all this. So fine, you can buy the less expensive matzah for the other 6 days of Pesach. Okay, that's okay.
Friend of mine who eats matzah from Pesach to Purim.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
At the beginning of Purim, he stops.
Yeah. I know that person also. Okay, matzah ashira. Matzah ashira is enriched matzah, which means that they put fruit juice in the matzah. Okay, and. Okay, or egg matzah, fruit juice. In general, Sfaradim are lenient about eating this. Ashkenazim are stringent and they don't eat this stuff. There's a concern that it might machmit, it might leaven. And because of this, Ashkenazim don't eat this stuff. Some Sfaradim do eat it, but you can't use it for Leil HaSeder. Okay, it's something you. And now, Ashkenazim, though, are lenient about this for people who have digestive issues, or a chole, someone who's elderly or sick, they can eat matzah shir. It's a little bit softer. It's a little bit softer on the body, on the digestive system. Okay, moving on to more products. Let's talk about kidneyot. Okay, kidneyot.
What is this story about? Matzah dashing water.
Okay, gebrachs. Okay, so let's talk about gebrachs and then we'll get to kidneyot. Gebrachs means, it's a Yiddish word for matzah. It's already fully cooked or baked matzah that you then put into water. Chassidim are machmir about this. No one else is machmir about this. Just chassidim. It's not even in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? It doesn't appear in any early halachic sources. In our communities, we're not machmir for this. If someone has a minhag, for whatever reason, to be machmir about this, you could put your matzah in your soup, you could put jelly on, you could put cream cheese. We're not machmir about this. But the reason the chassidim are machmir, they say, well, maybe you could still leaven, even though it's baked. Maybe there are little crumbs within the matzah that are not fully baked, and if you put water on it, then it could leaven, it can turn into chametz. We don't concern ourselves with this. Okay. Now, let's talk about kidneyot. Kidneyot is a complicated topic because things are different here in Eretz Yisrael than they are in America. Let me tell you a little bit about Jewish politics, okay? In America, in the rest in South Africa, maybe I imagine in Russia as well, okay, the Ashkenazim have hegemony in Chutz La'aretz. Everything goes by Ashkenazi psak, which means that none of the products that you find on the shelf will have kidneyot in them. Everything is kidneyot free. B'nai Brak is also, there's an Ashkenazi hegemony in places like B'nai Brak. Okay? In Eretz Yisrael, the Sfaradim have hegemony. Okay? They're the ruling force here. And because they're the ruling force here, many of the products that you will find on the shelves here in Eretz Yisrael will have kinyot in them, okay? And I'm fairly certain even places like Shuk Mahadrin, I didn't check there, but even places like Shuk Mahadrin, someone please confirm that for me if you can, places like Shuk Mahadrin. Second one?
Shukotar is Mahadrin. This is okay. Not only Mahadrin, Shukotar, the other
okay. World countries. So places like this will also have products with kinyot in them. Okay, and therefore, you see it says something's kasher lePesach, but then it says rak v'ochtei kinyot, or kasher lePesach Beit Yosef, rak v'ochtei kinyot. Or it's kasher lePesach for Rabbanut, but it's not kasher for Badatz, and then you're like, what is going on in this place? Okay, and you get very, and it gets very confusing. Okay, so, okay, kinyot are legumes. I don't know if that answers your, helps you in any way, but we'll talk about what that is in a second. Now, I've written up a sheet to try to give you guidance about what to do with kinyot. So if you go to the link on the chat, on the right side of the Zoom chat, and again, this is also online, if you just search Pesach Shiftei Kitniot, and you can find it in the WhatsApp, in WhatsApps that I've sent to you over the last few weeks as well. It's in your the WhatsApp conversation with me, okay? Now, let me share with you, let me give you some background on kitniot. Kitniot are legumes. What are examples of legumes? Okay, I'm going to give you some examples. Rice, alfalfa, peas, millet, sorghum, chickpeas, fenugreek seeds, sunflower seeds. It's called chamaniot in Hebrew, sunflower seeds. Buckwheat, cumin, vetch, black-eyed peas, arum, soy, mung beans, lentils, fava beans, lupin beans, poppy seeds, pulse, caraway, hemp seeds, common beans, sesame seeds, lupin seeds, corn, clover seeds, saffron, and tamarind fruit. Okay, that's basically the extensive list of kitniot. Okay, and the reason that Ashkenazim, specifically Ashkenazim, started being concerned about it is the Sefer Mitzvot Katan Smak brings down a few explanations for this. And basically, it's that these things would be ground down into grains. And you could start getting confused. Well, rice flour looks like wheat flour, and they get mixed up, and they, you know, and it looks, it's midi demidgan is the phrase that he uses. You could confuse them. These are things that you store. They're sort of like grains. You also might make dishes out of them, and you won't know the difference. So because of this confusion, Ashkenazim created the chumrah, the stringency, or halacha, whatever it is. There's a debate about how strong of a minhag this is, of not eating any kidneyot on Pesach. Okay.
Sfardim eat hummus as well.
1 second. Hummus, chickpeas is another example. Okay, I think, yeah, I have chickpeas in here. Okay, now, how broadly do you define kidneyot? So some say it's defined botanically. Anything that is considered a legume, according to botanical definitions, is considered kidneyot. But others say that, a second opinion, is only things that fall under the reason, the rationale for the prohibition. The reason kidneyot are prohibited is because it may look like chametz. Only things that may look like chametz. Let me give you an example of something that you may think would look like chametz, but it's not included in the gzera. Do Ashkenazim eat potatoes on Pesach? Yeah, well, that's interesting. I could show you potato flour. It doesn't look all that much different than wheat flour. Can you imagine what would Ashkenazim do without potatoes? Okay, so, you know. Now, the third explanation from Moshe Feinstein says only those things that were prohibited according to the original decree in Europe are what's prohibited today. So they didn't, according to that, if we follow Moshe through, they didn't have corn in Europe. They only had it in America, the Americas. They didn't have...
Mashed potato.
Say again?
Mashed potato.
Well, they had potatoes. No,
potato was brought from the United States.
So fine. Maybe another example. Okay, maybe that's why it's permitted. But, you know, there are a lot of things they didn't have in Europe. Okay, but anyway, so where does this leave us? What happens, essentially, is that Sfaradim don't follow kitniot at all. Okay? Ashkenazim, for the most part, are very stringent about it. Okay? Now, but within the Ashkenazi camp, okay, there are two different schools of thought. And I encourage people, or at least when people ask me questions, I tend to encourage people to be, how shall we say, not lenient. They have to follow, if you're Ashkenazi, you cannot eat kitniot on Pesach. But you don't need to be crazy about kidneyot, meaning you don't need to be more stringent about kidneyot than you are about chametz. Okay, so there are certain heterim surrounding kidneyot which make life much easier here in Eretz Yisrael, and I want to share with you what some of those things are. So if we go to the document, okay, I will send you the. I'm going to send you the document. Do you have it? You guys have it? You have it open?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me share with you some of the practical guidelines for. Okay. We just went through the list of kidneyot. Okay. What about mustard and flaxseed? These are not kidneyot, but the custom is to treat them like kidneyot because they also grow in pots. Okay. So Ashkenazim generally don't have mustard seeds either. What about peanuts? Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that peanuts, unless you have a specific minhag to prohibit peanuts, you are allowed to have peanuts. Okay? What about soy? So when it comes to soy, there's a little bit of a debate. Okay? Rav Moshe Feinstein, again, if you go by his definition, soybeans came from the Americas. So they should be permitted. Okay? However, many people are stringent and they don't have soybeans. There are some poskim, Rav Dov Lior, for example, who's lenient today. And therefore one shouldn't have soybeans or soy sauce. There is one exception to this rule. If a person is allergic to milk and they always drink soy milk, okay, there's a basis for you to have soy milk on Pesach for the person who has an allergy, okay, based on this. Quinoa. Quinoa is a New World grain. You're allowed to have quinoa on Pesach. The OU permits Ashkenazim. I'm only talking about Ashkenazim here. To have quinoa on Pesach. You could have quinoa. Okay, string beans and fava beans, people are also lenient about when they're in their pods. Okay, because when they're in their pods, they're really like a vegetable. They're not considered like a legume. Okay, that's with regards to which things are considered kidneyot or not. What about oils derived from kidneyot? So when it comes to canola oil and soy oil, most Ashkenazim are strict about not consuming these. However, in principle, they don't come into contact with water when they're produced. Remember, how do you make chametz? You make chametz by taking flour and water and mixing it together. But these oils don't even come into contact with water in their production.
Don't you
Say again?
Don't you?
Matzah usually, water? No, matzah doesn't
water,
usually.
No, matzah yes, but for chametz, does it have to be
yeast? No, you could have matzah, you could make chametz without yeast.
You can make chametz without
yeast? Yeah, you can. You can. Flour and water and bake it. It will turn into something. Yeah.
Sunflower seed oil.
Okay. So, sunflower seed oil. I need to check on sunflower seed oil. Good question.
Didn't you use it in South Africa?
Mm-hmm. You did? Mm-hmm. Oh, so keep using. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Then keep using. Not a problem. Now. Yeah. I need to put in something about it. Okay. Khan seed oil also permitted. So when it comes to canola oil and soy oil, in principle, these are permitted. Okay, and I will tell you from a financial perspective, you can't always be buying some people olive oil is like incredibly expensive. It's like 50 shekels, 60 shekels a bottle. It's crazy. Whereas you can get canola oil for like 10 shekel a bottle. So fine, you could rely on this. Cottonseed oil is also permitted. Corn oil is not permitted because it is often produced by soaking the corn in water. Okay, now there are many products on the shelves that they'll say le'ochle kidneyot bilvad, meaning they're only for people who eat kidneyot. Can you eat these products? So I want to share with you a few examples of things that you can eat, even though it says le'ochle kidneyot bilvad, and as Ashkenazim, you're not allowed to eat this stuff. Number one, all the chocolate bars and sweets that have what's called lecithin, lecithin in them, or in Hebrew, the product is called liftit. This comes from rapeseed, okay? This is permitted. You can look at the footnote here, number 12, about why it's permitted. Lecithin is an emulsifier that is produced from rapeseed or soybean. Some are strict about this. All the badatz hachsherim forbid this, but many poskim, including Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, Rav Lezer Melamed, permit this again for Ashkenazim. So all of the chocolate bars and all the sweets that have lecithin in them, you are allowed to have as Ashkenazim. Furthermore, some of the tenuva milky products say, you'll get like a yogurt. It says, I'm not talking about a yogurt with like corn or something in it. I'm talking about like, pieces of corn, which doesn't exist anyway. But I'm talking about, so there's little rice chocolate things. I'm talking about like the regular, sometimes you'll find it on cheeses or all these things. And when it comes to Tenuva products, okay, everything here, any kidneyot that's in there is nullified before Pesach. You don't need to worry about these products. You could have all the Tenuva milky products, even if they say le'ochle kidneyot bilvat. Okay, that's the second thing to know about. Again, this is all written down on the document. If you go to Shivtei Pesach, okay, you'll find these things. Do you need to sell kidneyot? May I eat at someone else's home who eats kidney oat? You do not need to sell or get rid of your kidney oat. You could eat at the home of a Sephardic Jew, even if the pots were used to cook on the same day. Okay? You could derive benefit from kidney oat. You could give kidney oat to your dog. Okay? Okay, there's some interesting opinions about rice cakes and popcorn, which we're not going to get into right now. Can you eat kidney oat on Erev Pesach? No. As soon as you can't eat chametz at 11 o'clock or around 11 o'clock, you cannot eat kidney oat. For vegetarians and vegans, is kidney oat permitted on Pesach? You can see the article that I put in here with a link by Rev Daniel Mann. Okay? So that's everything with regards to kidney oat. Any questions? And if you have specific products that you want to know about, send me a picture of the label and I'll respond to it. But very often, you know, chocolates and sweets will just have lecithin in it. And it's basically fine. Okay? Any questions with regards to kidney oat? Anybody? Kidney oat questions?
So, Rabbi, saying the sunflower seed oil is okay?
Yeah, sunflower seed oil is okay. Yeah.
I tossed that to one of the rabbonim in the choir.
Okay.
And I asked him, can you use the normal squeeze juice based on paper? He says, no. Spartim can use it, but I cannot in my own more machmion.
Yeah.
So you have to get
the pot. Okay. So again, there's a machloket about that, but it's good to get kashrut Pesach toothpaste. Okay, next topic. Next topic has to do with, by the way, in general, you should make sure to have products that they have to say kashrut Pesach. And then there are some exceptions. For example, the OU permits any regular teas. Black, white, and green tea. Not decaffeinated. Regular teas, they say you could use them from before Pesach, not a problem. But decaffeinated teas or other teas, do need to be, you need kashrut Pesach signs on them. And this is actually based on the Ramah in Siman Taf Mem Zayin. Now, what about wine for Dalet Kosot? What if you, another Pesach product. Say again? It just quoted where the source was from. But yeah, what about wine? What if you don't like having wine for Dalet Kosot? And we're also going to talk about celiacs in just a moment as well. Someone asked a question about it online. So some people can't handle 4 cups of wine on Pesach. What should you do? So here's the order of what you should do. Rav Shimon Eider writes about this. First, you should try to have 4 cups of wine. If you can't do that, you could dilute the wine with grape juice. And if that's not good enough, dilute the wine with water. And if that's not good enough, you could just have grape juice. And if not, you could have grape juice diluted with water. Or you could even have raisin wine or Chamer Medina. Chamer Medina is a drink that's commonly drunken. It could be other alcoholic drinks or tea or coffee or juices or milk. But likely not good to have milk if you're eating meat at your Seder. But okay, this is just a list, but try to get through have the wine if you can. Okay, I'm just gonna go back for a second. To talk about lecithin, okay? Now, lecithin again. Yeah. Lecithin is a derivative of kidney oat. It's not kidney oat itself. It's a derivative of kidney oat that comes from rapeseed. And in order to produce it, it doesn't come into contact with water. And because of this, there are many reasons why we're leaning to ban this. Number one, it's a minimal agreement. It doesn't impart any taste. It's an emulsifier. It's batel before Pesach. It comes again from, it's a derivative of kidney oat, not even kidney oat itself. And therefore, there's no issue with having it according to many opinions. And again, it comes sometimes from kidney oat themselves, which is debate whether those things are even considered defined as kidney oat. Okay, so for Ashkenazim, you could have products with lecithin in them. Okay, so that's the explanation. I hope that's clear, Jake. Now, moving on to other Pesach products. Now, I did notice that someone had a question here. Okay, for vegetarians, okay, not vegans, can they eat kidney oat if their diet is very limited and there are existing health concerns? So I'm going to ask you to reach out to me privately. Okay, send me a WhatsApp, and I'm happy to address your question because it might depend on how severe the health conditions are. So please reach out to me on my private WhatsApp.
Like my sister, she doesn't eat meat because she doesn't like the way they kill the animals. So can she eat stuff like beans and stuff on Pesach?
Okay, so you know, listen. The general view is that if a person is if they're a real health concern, it's an individual question. That's the answer I'm going to give. If you have a particular question as a vegan or a vegetarian, please reach out to me privately. That's what I would say. Okay, so someone, Dylan, asked a question about sweetener with aspartame, heksher. I'm not sure what that is. Says Kenyot, please send me a picture of the label or send it on the chat group, and I could take a look at it. Okay, what about celiac? Someone here asked about. Yeah, so I'd have to see the actual thing. Someone asked a question: if a person suffers from celiac and is not allowed to eat any kind of grain, what do you do on Pesach? Okay, so here it depends on the level of the what. It depends on how severely a person is dealing with this. For a person for whom eating any grain would be life-threatening, they should not have any Pesach, any matzah on Pesach. Don't have any chametz either, okay? But do not have any matzah. If eating matzah is life-threatening for sakanat nefashot, you don't eat anything. Okay,
what
you don't eat matzah.
So
you don't have any matzah. You don't have any matzah. You don't fulfill the mitzvah because it's life-threatening, okay? Just like the same thing, you know. Okay, so now, if a person has a sensitivity, and you know it bothers their stomach a little bit, but it's not life threatening to them. And again, this might be case specific, and feel free to ask me questions, and I'll try to answer them depending on your situation. So then, you try to eat matzah that has reduced gluten in it. Okay, and there are some gluten free matzot, spelt or oat matzah. I don't know if it's fully reduced or it's partially reduced, and that's better for people who have celiacs. But Rav Yaakov Ariel points out that this is not a heter for everyone, meaning I'm not a celiac, thank God. I can't just say, oh, I'm going to have oat or spelt matzah, you know, this Leila said there. You could only have, really you should only have wheat or, you know, wheat matzah is ideal, barley matzah. But it's just for, meaning you want to have gluten in the matzah because the gluten is the part that makes chametz. Okay, so unless you're a celiac, you shouldn't be eating that stuff. Yes, Karen? Karen, question?
Yourself.
Say again?
You have muted. You muted yourself. I missed the whole thing after.
I don't think I was muted on there. Was everyone else able to hear? Just send me a thumbs up if you're able to hear. I don't think it was muted, but I'll send you the recording out afterwards. You'll be able to hear. Okay. Next, any other products that you have specific questions about with regards to Pesach products? Okay. Amy, wait one second. Amy, were you not able to hear me, Amy, as well? Okay, Dylan says you're able to hear me.
I was not able to hear.
Okay, one second, David. Okay, I'm going to send out the recording afterwards and you'll just catch up. We're about a minute... you know, just on the recording, we're at minute 47 right now. Okay, so it's about that.
Pesach rolls that you get like when you go to the schnitzel place. Next to Mozart.
Pesach rolls probably made out of potato flour or something, or it's not. It's not actually made out of wheat flour.
But
okay.
They say that for Sephardim, not for Ashkenazi.
So then, don't eat it. Okay, then don't eat the stuff. Maybe it's made out of kidney yolk or something, whatever it is. That would be a problem. Okay, now let's now talk about kashering your kitchen for Pesach. Okay. I just want to see if, okay. Now, in general, I want to let you know that in terms of kashering your particular products, if you go to the Rabbanut website in Ra'anana, I'm going to send it right, Rabbanut Ra'anana Pesach, they do kashering for Pesach, okay? So if you don't want to do it in your home, you could always bring your... you could bring your utensils and they'll kasher for you. Okay, you could bring it there. And I just want to show you, I'm just going to, the times, for example, of when they do this. One second. Hagalat kelim. Okay, I'm going to just take a picture of this. And...
Rabbi, I use paper plates on Pesach. Throw away plates.
Okay. Besides, that's
you throw it in the pot and you take the next one.
That's very good. Okay, I'm going to send in a picture to the group here. 1 second, or let me see if okay. I'm going to send this through to the Zoom. 1 second. Okay. Okay. Tell me if you could access the link that I just sent. Okay. Yeah. No, I sent it onto the Zoom. But let me see if I could just get a picture here.
Your coffee machines that you have at home, espresso machines, can you coach all that?
Yes, you can. Well, we're going to talk about espresso cured machines, yes. We'll talk about that 1 second.
Oy vavoy, if I don't have my espresso in the morning when I wake up.
Oy vavoy. Okay, 1 second. I'm just sending a picture. One second. A snipping tool, that's
very good.
1 second. Taskbar. Okay, good. I'm going to take a picture and send this through to you. 1 second. Wait, 1 second. This is just taking. Here we go. Okay. The let's see if this will go into the chat. Okay, I just sent a picture through to the chat. Okay, and you know what? I could just share the screen. Oh, okay, and I can't share the screen. But if you look at the picture that I just sent,
it's on WhatsApp. I can't find it.
Okay, it's on the Zoom. It's on the Zoom. Yeah, it's on the Zoom. Yeah, it's in Hebrew, so that's why I'm just going through this to show you how you can, if you don't want to kosher the stuff yourself, what you can do about that. Okay, basically, on it tells you exactly when on Yom Rivi, Yom Chamishi, Yom Rishon, 4:17, 4:18, 4:21. You can go to two different places, the Chanyon Beit HaAmin HaYashan, by Klausner, 56, or to the Chanyon HaPalmach, and they will help you kasher your stuff. Okay? And there are certain things that you're not able to kasher. Please turn that off, David. Okay? What are some of the things that you can kasher? Anything that's ceramic, clay cheres, we're going to talk about some of these things in just a little bit. But there are some things they don't want you kashering. Okay, now let's talk about kashering on Pesach. Are there any particular products that you want to make sure that we, David? Please turn it off. Okay, I'll just wait for a second, David.
Yeah, it's off.
Okay. Are there any particular products you guys have questions about in terms of kashering? Just want to make sure I get through those things. Please feel free to write into the chat or any particular things that come to mind. Okay. So let's just run through. Let's try to run through the products now. Again, there's also a list. If you go to shiftaypesach.com, there's a whole thing, how to kasher your kitchen. And everything is in here, how to kasher your kitchen. There's a whole list, every single product that you might have in your kitchen, very practical, how to kasher. Okay? So you may want to take a look there, because that is a really good reference guide for you to have. Say again? How to kasher your kitchen. Shiftei Pesach, okay. It's in the go to the, if you go to the Zoom, I sent it into the group as well. It's one of the first things that I sent. Okay, how to kasher your kitchen? Okay, you can see the.
How do I find it on Zoom?
Go to the regular Zoom link that we have every single day from Mujumi, and you'll find it. Okay, let's go through a few different principles. Okay, and again, if there are particular products that you have questions about, you can. Here, I'll just send you guys the link. Let me just send you guys the link. Then you don't need to be on the Zoom.
Because I want to see the thing.
I'm gonna send you the. I'm gonna send you the link. I'm gonna send it to you.
But, you sent it previously.
I sent it previously. Yes. Yeah. I sent it previously. It should be in your. Here. Let me send. I'm gonna send it through. Okay. I'll give everybody 30 seconds just to.
Get another cup of coffee.
Okay. Here.
No, I don't know how to find it.
Okay. Okay, Felicia, I'm sending it through to you. Okay?
It's on Zoom.
Leia, I'm sending it through to you as well. I'm sending it through, yeah.
It's on Zoom.
Okay, again. Then it, just go to your WhatsApp. It's now on WhatsApp. Okay, I send it to your WhatsApp. Okay?
Send it to your WhatsApp.
Okay. Send it to your WhatsApp.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go through a few different principles. In general, we are more stringent on Pesach than we are during the year, okay, about chametz. And part of the reason is, especially for Ashkenazim, okay, any trace of chametz is a problem. Even something with a taste that's pagum, we consider to be a problem. So, I don't imagine anyone here is going to find pieces of chametz in their dishes. That's not going to happen. But what you might have is you might have what's called bliot. You may have things. I just sent you the link to your WhatsApp. Just click there. Okay. You may have something that is. You may have something which is something that is embedded in your pots and pans. Okay, and you want to use your pots and pans for the rest of the year and use them on Pesach itself. So basically, you need to remove whatever is in your pots and pans. There are certain things you can kosher, there are certain things that you can not kosher, and there are different ways of doing this. And in general, we have a principle, kibolo kach polto. The way that something gets embedded or inserted into the walls of your pot is the way that you remove it. Okay, that's the way that you get it, kibolo kach polto. So for example, let's say I have a baking tray, and I cook cookies in the baking tray. I pick cookies in the baking tray every single week before Shabbos. That baking tray is coming in direct contact with chametz at a very high heat, and it's direct. So I would need to use high heat in order to remove the chametz from the baking tray. Okay? And I'll just tell you that this is one of the reasons why we don't kasher baking trays on Pesach at all. We don't. We just buy a new one, or we don't, you know, use baking trays, whatever it is. Or we use people who just use tinfoil. Okay.
Rabbi Avadia said that if you want to kosher your microwave, your dishwasher, you have to buy a new rack.
Okay, so we'll talk about it. Okay, now, so there are different ways of koshering. So let me just go through the list of the different ways that you options for removal. So one type of removal is called hagala. Hagala is when you use cook through liquid. So let's say I cook pasta, and I have a pot. And I always have liquid in the pot. And the pot has liquid in it. Okay, I don't cook pasta with it directly touching the pot. It's not going to cook. I have liquids. I have water. Okay, so that's liquid-based. So in order to get rid, if I want to use that pot on Pesach, I need to use a water-based method of removing whatever's embedded in the kli. That's called hagala, liquid-based. Libun is fire-based. Again, the baking tray. Or anything that comes in direct contact with fire, there are things that we call, there's libun chamur, which is very severe, you need to get it to a very, very high heat. And that's what we do for ovens, for example. And then there's another, more reduced type, which is called libun kal. But most of the time we're doing, and then sometimes things just need to be washed. Okay, you don't need to kasher your fridge on Pesach. You just clean out the crumbs. Okay, that's called shtifa. That's just cleaning it out. Certain things we do what's called irui kli rishon, where we pour hot water onto it. Okay, that's like a lower heat than being in a pot on a fire. Okay, so for example, tables potentially, or countertops, we're going to use irui kli rishon. But I'm going to go through all of these things. So let's go through this in an organized fashion. Let's talk about hagala. And does anyone here have any questions about how to do hagala? Anybody? Hagala is basically. Let me just go through what it is quickly. It's boiling. Hagala means boiling. I take a pot. I could use a pot that was used from last year, a big Pesach pot from last year, or I could take a new pot that I used in this year, and I can kosher that first. And what I basically do is I heat it up, I put water in it. It's a big pot. I put water into it, okay? And then I put some soap in, and I heat it up to very high heat on the gas. Okay, until it overflows, it goes into the bowl, boils over to the side of the pot, and then that pot is considered kosher. Now, there are a few conditions. Number one, it's good to throw in some soap, by the way. Tom's po game, soap is helpful in that regard. You can kosher anything unless you have not used it in 24 hours. Okay, this is important, which is why one of the ideal times to kosher is going to be on Saturday night this year, because you don't use any of your utensils to cook on Shabbat. So for some people, Motzei Shabbat might be a little bit too close, a little too hot to handle. Okay? So you may want to do it earlier, fine. But you just got to make sure you don't use your oven or your sinks for hot for 24 hours beforehand. Okay, now. And then what you, usually what you do then is you take the stuff out of the Haggadah thing and then you put it under cold water. Again, the Rabbanut does this. If you go to the Motza Datit, what I showed you, they will do this stuff for you if you want them to do it. It's not a problem. You don't have to do this at home. You might need to stand in line. And there might be some things they're not going to be willing to kasher. Okay? Now you just need to be aware of that. And there's a list of things they don't kasher. But otherwise, that should suffice. Now, so what can you do Haggadah on? Silverware. Okay? And by the way, during Pesach is the one time in the year you're allowed to switch over from dairy to meat. We generally don't do that. You have stuff you want to turn over to dairy to meat, you can do that during Pesach. Pots. Okay? You could do this for pots. Okay?
Any kind of pot.
Metal. We're talking about metal pots.
Yeah,
metal pots. Now, it is important, though, that, you might need to, when it comes to pots, you should try to do libun on the cracks. So if they're like, libun is either using a blowtorch, but you don't have to. You don't really have to. And just to go back to that Rabbanut thing for a second, which I shared which I had in the picture here, okay? They said, for example, any pots with like cracks in them is a problem, because anything that has like holes or cracks, they're gonna have to do libun on it, and they don't really want to do it. They got to be smooth pots, essentially. Okay, so that's just something to be aware of, or anything that has wooden handles, or also they say here. They don't want to kasher anything with plastic handles either. Okay, we're going to talk about plastic in a second. Okay, in general, you can kasher plastic. We plastic in here in Israel. Okay, now what else? Plastic. Okay, let's talk about plastic. You can do Haggadah on plastic. Okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein was against it because he thought plastic was like, maybe it's like clay, and you're not allowed to kasher any clay products. Clay products are the one that you can never kasher. Enamel and porcelain and that stuff can never be kasher. But plastic, according to Rav Moshe, is also a problem because maybe it's like kli cheres. Maybe it's like clay. But most poskim don't agree with Rav Moshe, and you can kasher plastic.
Because most of the handles on the stainless steel pots are plastic.
Yeah, nachon. Correct? That's fine. It's not an issue. Now, that being said, many people don't kasher kids' plastic bottles. It might get ruined, whatever it is, we don't do. Okay, now, countertops. Countertops is also something that we sort of do Haggadah on. Just the thing that we do with countertops, so there are two different opinions. Mm-hmm. Some people, the concern about countertops is very far-fetched. That, if you think about it, that you may have had a hot ball of chametz that falls on your countertop, and that you are then going to put a piece of your Pesach food in that one spot where there was a hot thing of chametz, and that would be a problem. That's very unlikely. But out of concern, whatever it is, we do most. You could do one of two things. You can cover your countertops, or you could do Irui Kli Rishon, where you take your kumkum. Okay, you clean off your countertop. You take your kumkum and you pour it on every single spot on the countertop. Meaning the water should directly hit from your kumkum onto the countertop. It's a little bit messy. Water does come down, so you do it together with two people, and then you can, and then you just wipe it off. But then you don't need to cover your countertops. Okay, and that's a big plus. Okay, you need to make sure the hot water hits every part of the countertop, and that's called Irui Kli Rishon. So it's sort of a derivative of Haggadah using hot water, and that is fine. Some are machmir then to still cover, but you don't have to be machmir. Can you kasher through steam? Rav Moshe was against using steam. Some are against this. My Rebbe from Yeshiva University, he paskin that you can use steam, but you got to have like a real industrial steam cleaner. To use that instead of using the water. But it's got to be a proper one. You can't just have one of these, It's got to be a serious one. Okay, can you kasher all different materials? So the answer is anything that's not clay. Okay, you can kasher stone, composite stone, Caesar stone, formica, granite, but not enamel. Okay, not any porcelain. Okay, you could basically kasher all of these things. Granite, marble, all can be kashered. So that's not an issue. What about the table? again, the table, the same concern that there may be a hot piece of the vargush, piece of chametz that appear on your table. You're not going to want to, it's unlikely that you're going to pour hot water onto your table. Maybe if you have a glass table, you feel comfortable doing that. But otherwise, you cover it. You just cover the table with a cover top that doesn't have chametz on it. Okay, sink. There are two different opinions about sinks. Some are machmir, that they use an insert in your sink. Now, if it's stainless steel, okay, you know, okay, some are machmir that they, yeah.
With the insert, so I've got plastic bowls that I insert, but when you pour into them, is that...
No, it's fine. You're not putting your Pesach dishes into them. Some people use inserts. Others say, listen, you clean it well, you dry it, and you do Irui Kli Rishon. Same thing with the kumkum all over the thing. And then you can... Even if it's not stainless steel, it's fine. If it's plastic, it's again. You could still do it, okay. And one can be leaning and do this, and it's reasonable to do that. Again, you can't cash your ceramic or porcelain. You got to make sure what you got to clean it well. You got to clean out the sink well beforehand. Okay, sink accessories. Again, you're pouring water, hot water. You do kumkum. Do the kumkum over the faucet. And you could do it on the drain, or you should probably just swap out the drains. Racks. In theory, you could do the same thing on the racks, or you could do hagala on the racks if you want, or just swap them. Okay, different ones, whatever it is.
The sinks here in Israel, what are they made out of?
Many of them are made out of silly quartz. There's this. It's like a plastic. It's like a white plastic.
Well, yeah.
You could use an insert for that, or you can kosher it. Clean it and kosher it. Yeah. Okay. Dishwashers. Okay. Some are machmir, that you need to do a hagala on a dishwasher. Okay. Because it's a kli rishon, because the water is heating up on there, just like it heats on a fire, and you need a kli rishon. And you can't do hagala. I can't take my whole dishwasher and put it into a boiling hot pot. That's not going to work. So maybe you'd have to do hagala, which is pouring hot water with an evan miluban, which is like a very hot stone, which is basically impossible to do. But others are lenient. That you basically, and Rav Rimon paskins this way, you clean out the dishwasher very thoroughly. Every crack and crevice, clean it out thoroughly. Okay, you take the filter, you take any pieces, and you do hagala on those pieces. Okay, in a pot, and then you turn on the dishwasher to the highest cycle. And you throw soap into the little dish box. And you throw soap into the main holder. And you put it on high heat, the longest cycle. And then you could use it for Pesach. So you have a dishwasher on Pesach. Okay, another thing that requires hagala is a Keurig or an espresso machine. Okay, clean your Keurig Nespresso machine well. Don't use it for 24 hours. Again, remove the K-cup holder. Do hagala on it. Put that into the pot. And then run a kosher cup through the machine, and it's kosher. Okay, it goes to the Pesach pot, and then you could use it on Pesach. Okay, in urn. You could use your regular, urn. Again, do hagala on it. What does hagala mean for an urn? So you heat it up, and you let the water run through. Okay. You got to clean out the white residue. Sometimes other gook gets stuff stuck in there. You clean it out. The lid, though, could be an issue if you put challah. Some people put challah on top of the lid, right? So in that case, you need to do hagala on the lid. Okay, you got to do hagala. You got to put it into the okay. Now, in terms of frying pans, Sfaradim paskin that you could do hagala on a frying pan because there's usually liquid in a frying pan. But in general, Ashkenazim don't do hagala. And I don't kosher frying pans for Pesach. Teflon pans certainly can't be kosher. Better to just have kosher the Pesach frying pans. Okay? But if it's expensive, if it's just another cost, like, oh my God, this is just way beyond our budget, so then there is room to kosher the frying pan as well. But a non-Teflon frying pan, just a regular frying pan. Okay? Now, good. What about things that just require shtifa? Washing. Fridge. Requires just clean it out, get the breadcrumbs out. We'll get to a microwave. That's steam. Okay, that's shtifa. Now it is important. I know in our fridge you got a lot of breadcrumbs stuck in the ice. That's like really mamish. You got to get rid of that stuff. Okay, dentures or retainers. You just got to clean it. No one sticks boiling hot water in their mouth that you need hagala for. But clean it out. Brush it. Clean it out. Okay, let's talk about glass, dishes, and cups. When it comes to glass. Svaradim believe that glass is not bullet. There's no bliot. Nothing gets into glass. Glass, nothing is ever absorbed or immersed into glass. And therefore, glass, there's no issue with glass whatsoever on Pesach. During the year or during Pesach, so they could use glass, and some Sephardim use glass for meat and dairy in general. Okay, they switch between them. Okay, but the Ramaz Machmir, that glass may come from, it comes from sand, and it's closer to clay, and there's a concern that it's like clay, and therefore it's bolea, and nothing comes out. So it's bolea, and nothing comes out, just like ceramic or clay. So and therefore, when it comes to glass on Pesach, Ashkenazim don't kasher glass or Pyrex unless it's shad hadchak. Okay, so
we always, I don't know, it's just a South African custom, but I mean, salting it, we put it in water.
Okay, that's cups. That's cups. I'm not talking about plates right now. I'm talking about plates. Plates which you use hot on them. Okay, you might have put a piece of schnitzel on it, and it's hot in the microwave. It's very hot. My glass plates. Right now, I'm talking about glass plates. Ashkenazim don't use glass plates for the rest of the year. They don't kosher them either. Okay. What about Corel? It's the same thing as glass. Okay. Pyrex, same thing as glass. Corningware is. What's Corningware? It's the same as I think it's a ceramic or glass, so Ashkenazim don't use that. Okay, in terms of Jake, I'll go back for a second to the countertops. When we say that you leave the countertops, don't have anything like hot on the countertops for 24 hours. Okay, you could use them, and I don't know anyone who doesn't use their countertops within a 24-hour period. But just don't drop something that's like a really hot, you know. Don't cook bread and then like stick it on the counter right after it comes out of the oven. Okay, that's what I wouldn't do. Okay, what about glass cups? Not glass plates, glass cups. So again, Sfaradim have no issue with this whatsoever. What is the concern by glass cups? That Ashkenazim are machmir about something that's called miut tashmisho. So a glass cup, normally I use a cup for wine, use a cup for water, it's cold, there's no issue. But maybe I used it for whiskey or for a davar harif, which then gets absorbed or immersed, which could be a problem. However, there is, for Ashkenazim, there is a way out, which is called milui v'irui. Milui v'irui is where you take your glass cups and you put them in water for 3 days straight, and every 24 hours you switch it. Okay, and people in Europe used to do this. The Mishnah Berurah says if you could afford buying new cups, just buy new cups. But I will tell you, one of the challenges here in Israel is that people don't have space for a whole other set of glass cups. It's like, mamish, it's like not a simple thing. So I don't think you need to buy a second glass of, you know, set of glasses. But you could do milui v'irui, which again is filling them up with water and then switching out the water every 24 hours. People do it in their bathtub. It's in some ways the easiest way to do it. Okay. Clay cups cannot be kosher for Pesach. Don't even try. Kiddush cups, Ashkenazim, you know, let's say they're glass or whatever it is. Metal cups, you could do Hagalah on them. Do Hagalah on them. And maybe you had whiskey in there or something, or some non-kosher harif drink. We spoke about garbage bins. Okay, let's get to the next thing. Things that require libun chamur, which is like heating up the object till it's like burning red hot. So toaster ovens need libun gamur, which is why we basically don't do libun gamur. So you don't kosher your toaster oven, just sort of clean it out. You don't need to clean it out like, for 3 hours. Just clean out the crumbs and put it away, okay? And anything that you're putting away, you literally, you put tape on it and it's being sold and you don't need to worry about it, okay? Baking dishes, we don't kosher baking dishes. You have to get kosher lePesach baking dishes if you plan to bake. What about oven? If you have a self-cleaning oven, it's very simple. You put on the self-cleaning option. You don't need to do anything before, just the self-cleaning option, and it's totally fine. If you have a non-self-clean oven, so you got to clean it thoroughly. You have to clean it with that oven stuff. It's not easy. And then you put it on the highest setting for an hour, whatever it is. Okay? And in terms of the racks, you don't want to leave in the racks for a self-cleaning cycle. Just put it in the highest cycle. Not self-cleaning, but a higher cycle with the racks inside, and that's fine. or you could change the racks, or you can you can cover the racks. Okay, or when you're doing the highest temperature for a non-self-clean oven, so you have the racks in there during that time as well. Okay. Porcelain clay dishes that you only use for cold. If you only use them for cold, you can use them. But fine. What about a Shabbos blech or plata? So there, the concern is that there are food spills on it, which is really like a clear rishon. So this, you just need to clean it off, clean everything off, and then put it on for an hour, and then cover it. Three things. Clean it, put it on for an hour, and then cover it, and then you can use your blech for Pesach. What about the grates of a stovetop? So for these, basically, you turn on clean the stovetop, and turn it on for 15 minutes, high heat. You could put a pot there, and then it sort of spreads it, and that's totally fine. And between the grates, you should clean off and cover. If you have a non-gas stovetop, okay.
If you have a gas stove, can you just clean it and put it on for an hour and let it work?
Non-gas stove, like you have an electric stovetop?
A gas stove.
Which part are you talking about here?
The hobs of the gas.
Yeah, so I just said for the hobs, you turn it on for half, 15 minutes on the highest heat, and it's totally, totally fine. Okay, next thing. Non-gas stove, you have an electric element. Clean it, leave it on until it gets red hot. Okay, and then, ideas, you have to cover the stuff in between. Or you could use, you do Irui Kli Rishon, make sure you don't break the glass, but Irui Kli Rishon in between the burners is also fine. If you have an induction stovetop, okay, you can basically, the easiest way to do this is you put a pot on, okay, you let the pot boil over, and then you sort of pick up the pot a little bit, and water will also get on. Induction, you're using these special pots that connect to the specifically to the stovetop, and then the water will penetrate under the induction area, and it will be fine. Warming draw is not an easy thing to kosher. I don't know how many people who have them here in Israel. Anyway, barbecues. So this is an interesting shift with barbecues, that in recent years, CRC, OU, a bunch of websites are saying that you can kosher barbecues. Okay, now, it does take some work. Again, you would have to do libun for this because there's direct heat. So this is what you need to do for a barbecue. And again, everything is on the sheet here, on the document, which I sent into the... So what do you do? So the CRC says, can a barbecue grill be kosher for Pesach? What did the grates term do? The grates of a barbecue grill must be kosher with libun gamur. And the simplest way to do this is by sandwiching the grill between layers of charcoal. You take the grill and sandwich it between charcoal. Place a layer of charcoal on a cement surface. Put the grate on top of the charcoal and cover the grate with another layer of charcoal. Light all of the charcoal and allow it to burn for an hour. This will kosher the grates. Alternatively, you can purchase separate grates for Pesach, which is probably the easiest thing to do. Okay, and the rest of the grill can be kashered with libun kal, which can be accomplished relatively easily as follows. If the grill comes with a cover, light the grill with coals or gas, close the cover and allow it to burn on its highest setting for an hour. And that will, burn everything that's inside. If it doesn't have a cover, then use coals. Okay, but you do need to clean it. You need to try to clean it beforehand, okay? And if the grill has too many cracks and crevices and you can't get there, so then you can't use it on Pesach. Okay, microwave. Microwave is through steam. And how do you clean a microwave? You clean out the microwave, make sure it's clean. You probably want to take out the glass thing there. Ashkenazim, again, don't really use it on Pesach, but in theory, if you did, it's still fine. And you put on, you take a cup and you put it inside for 5 minutes.
Let
the steam spreads and it's totally fine. Convection microwave. I'm not 100% sure about convection microwave. I need to get back to you. I will get back to you about convection microwave. Yes.
What is that? What's a convection?
I don't know. Whatever it is. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah. I'll get back to you. Yes.
A water bar. It's very new.
A water bar.
You know.
A demi bar.
Just clean it. Clean it. Yeah. Even that. You just clean it off a little bit. To wipe it down. Totally fine. Yeah.
The microwave, the glass that goes in. Do you have to cover that, like with baking paper or something?
Yeah, you could do that. Just cover that. That's what I would recommend. cover with baking powder. Yeah, baking paper. Okay, blenders, mixers. Again, if you used it for heat for chametz, it's got to do hagala on it. And if it's just used for cold, for non-charif items, then just wipe it down and you can use the blend. If you make shakes, for example, you just clean it down. You're not using anything hot in it. Totally fine. Yeah, that's you boiling water in it. Exactly. That's the steam. That's the way that you use a microwave.
And it has to be longer than however...
Yeah, 5-6 minutes, whatever it is. Okay, questions that are on the thing. Evelyn, you asked, I am away, I sell my chametz, do I have to concentrate in one cabinet? You don't need to concentrate in one cabinet. You could leave it anywhere in the house, assuming no one is using your house. But what you do need to do is have one room where you're doing bedika and making sure there's no chametz in that room, okay? So, and otherwise, you could just write down that you are selling your, you're renting out your whole house. What do I do in the hotel room on Monday, Erev Chag? So if you're going to a hotel, Erev Chag, so on Sunday night you do Bedika in your home with a bracha. And then Monday when you get to the hotel, you do a Bedika without a bracha. Check. There's no chametz in there. Maybe there will be chametz in the fridge. Check under the bed. Check wherever it is. Okay? Any other questions related to kashering your kitchen for Pesach?
I can't drink anything from the mini bar in the hotel on Pesach.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody?
Can I do that?
You probably should.
Like a Coke or a Sprite or water, or shouldn't I?
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. If you have any other questions, feel free to reach out. We're going to stop here. We've gotten through a lot of material. To everybody here for your perseverance. If you have specific questions, feel free to write to me, and I will respond to your questions. And again, everything, search Google, Pesach, Shiftei, and you'll see the documents there, and it will give you, like, really everything's very clear. There's also a document there about starting early Seder, okay, which is worth looking into. Exactly, it's worth reading. But others, I want to wish everybody here, Chag Kasher V'Sameach, it should be a Chag of Geula, redemption, for all of Am Yisrael, for our captives, for our Chayalim. And please, God, only Besor to vote.
Early meeting in Shiftei.
Okay.
For that matter there, little kids.